Welcome on to the Gambion Gambion podcast.
Perfect.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast. We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm your host, Tyler Frankie. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll be talking with Jamie Stickle, the city's new economic development director. She'll tell us about the city's approach to commercial and industrial development and why it matters. And we'll also talk about the city's hopes and dreams for the old library building. Later, Canby then makes its triumphant return as we start a two-part series looking at the history of the Canby Public Library. We'll hear about what the first library did back when it opened in the 1930s, when they had space, new bookshelves, and a staff librarian, but not enough books. But first, the news. Three Clackamas County deputies were recognized this week for saving the life of a week-old infant who had stopped breathing at Clackamas Town Center. On Sunday, September 30th, deputies Jonathan Zakarki, Dan Olson, and Jonah Russell sprinted through the mall on an urgent call of a newborn, Audrey Harmon, who had stopped breathing in the photo studio at JCPenney. They found the baby with her parents pale and unresponsive. The mother had called 911 and a number of Good Samaritans had helped the parents and attempted infant CPR. The deputies took control of the situation, clearing the baby's airway, performing chest compressions, and other life-saving measures until paramedics arrived. Baby Audrey was eventually transported to OHSU, where she remains in intensive care, but her condition is steadily improving. 1 week later, October 7th, Audrey's parents, Caleb Harmon and Jesse Seifer, invited the deputies to the hospital to visit Audrey and take a photo. Caleb told us he wanted a picture to show Audrey one day of the guys who saved her life, Deputy Zakarki said. It was unbelievably heartwarming to be invited back and amazing to see how far she has progressed since last Sunday. For video of the initial incident and photos of the subsequent visit, check out our website at canbenowpod.com. When Rachel Biggie turned 10 years old, she knew exactly what she wanted for her birthday. Shoes. Okay, you may be thinking, sure, she's a little girl. Girls like shoes. But that's not what this was about. No, Rachel was collecting donations for a nonprofit called Souls for Souls. That's S-O-L-E-S for S-O-U-L-S. They're a nonprofit that collects shoes and redistributes them to people in need here in the U.S. and around the world. Back in the fourth grade, Rachel collected over 500 pairs of shoes, making a difference in the lives of hundreds of people. Now she's 16 and a junior at Canby High School, and this month she's holding another shoe drive. But as she tells Mallory Gwynn of Gwynn's Coffee House on CTV5, this time her goal is a little more ambitious.
So back in the fourth grade, you were able to collect 500 pairs of shoes.
Yes.
What do you want to do this time?
I want to raise at least 1,000 pairs.
1,000 pairs. 1,000 pairs of shoes. That's an amazing number. And you think you can do that, right?
Yes, I do.
All right. I love that attitude. I love that spirit that you have.
Rachel has set up donation points at Gwynn's, at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Canby, and at all four Al's Garden Center locations, Woodburn, Sherwood, Gresham, and Wilsonville. She'll be accepting donations of new and gently used shoes through the end of the month. In March, Rachel and her mother will travel to the Dominican Republic with Souls for Souls. They'll visit schools and orphanages, delivering shoes to needy people, many of whom have never owned a pair of shoes before. But before they fit the shoes on, for each one, they'll take the time to wash their feet. How does Rachel feel about that?
I'm super excited.
The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners has approved $1.2 million toward finding affordable housing solutions in Clackamas County. This Affordable Housing and Services Fund, which the county says will be renewed annually, is intended to support innovative and sustainable programs to develop capacity and year-to-year continuity for essential affordable housing programming. Such funding is needed as housing costs, especially for renters, continue to rise, and wage increases are not keeping up. Officials say Clackamas County saw a sharp rise in homelessness last year, and of all the local families who are in need of affordable housing, only 19% actually have access to it. Commissioners hope this funding will help kickstart creative new solutions for the county's most vulnerable community members, including families with children, veterans, and disabled and elderly residents. Affordability and housing is a growing concern for Clackamas County, Commissioner Paul Savas said. There are residents that are vulnerable today and many more who may become homeless as rents increase. This investment will help leverage opportunities and develop solutions to keep our citizens in their homes. Clackamas County will be accepting proposals for funding between October 15th and November 19th. For more information about the fund, please contact Vahid Brown at 503-742-5345 or by email at vbrown@clackamas.us. Okay, so our guest today is Jamie Stickle. She's the new Economic Development Director for the City of Canby and previously the manager of our Main Street program for 5 or 6 years. Jamie, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for asking. Thanks for coming on the program. So, Jamie, why are you trying to ruin Canby with all this development?
Well, I would say that we're not ruining Canby with any development. You know, the city works with businesses, works with our construction companies when they're trying to put in new business, new developments, new apartment buildings like the Dahlia. And we aren't in charge of saying what can and cannot come in. We can you know, if you're going to put a manufacturing business in a downtown, that that's not an appropriate use in a downtown. But we can't say, we just don't like your business or your plan. So, so I don't think we're ruining it. You know, I think I've been here
No one can just stop growth or, you know, it's happening everywhere.
Right. It's just happening everywhere.
A human city, everything thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've been here 6 years now. And I think about the people that I've met that have been longtime Canby people, longtime Clackamas County people, people who have moved here from different states. I think we all bring unique experiences, unique attitudes, unique thoughts and energy. And so... a little growth.
Cool stuff, yeah.
Yeah, a little growth can go a long way
with
what it can do for all of us.
Sure. And I think that, you know, that what I've sort of seen, at least in the last few years, people maybe getting more fired up about is not really the development that you're into, maybe more the residential development and things that you're not necessarily involved with. But I think that one thing that is important to remember is that businesses and industry, the kind of things that people are excited and trying to attract to Canby, help help balance out that residential development in a number of important ways. They bring jobs to the area. And because so much of the city and our services like fire, police are funded through tax dollars, it's really those commercial and industrial properties, right, that help broaden out that tax base are a lot better for property valuation-wise than just having residential development, which we had a lot in the past few years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing to keep in mind is that in the couple of years before the last few years where we've seen a lot of development, we didn't have very much. So maybe we think of it as a balance.
Right.
I know I've been part of those conversations in the community. I've seen some of the conversations online. You know, I'd like housing to go into for everybody.
Sure.
And, you know, but it does raise the tax base. It does provide...
It means that the resident, it's not just the residents is bearing that tax burden.
Right.
And it deepens the amount of services that the city is able to offer and the fire district and school district, everything that benefits from property taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. It allows us as public entities to be better for our residents.
Sure. Cool. So there's a ton of stuff going on right now, development-wise. You've been running around like crazy. So I don't think we'd have time to go into everything. We wanted to just focus on one thing, and the thing that we've asked that we could talk about is a library.
Right.
We're actually here.
Yes.
If you guys can maybe hear the little echo that is going on, we're here in the large, empty library. It's a little spooky, don't you think?
Yes, it is a little spooky. It's October, and it just that crisp air is out there, and so kind of being here, and it's spooky, but hopefully it won't be spooky for long.
I feel like there's a lot of ghosts of, like, books around us, you think?
Books, right? and it was a hardware store previously. So,
tools, hammers,
yeah,
ghosts,
yeah, absolutely.
Lots of ghosts floating around. So the city owns a building, and they're trying to either find a buyer or someone to lease it, renovate it, make some kind of use out of it. Can you tell us where we're at right now with that process?
Absolutely. The city recently reopened the request for expressions of interest on this building. And you're right, we're looking for a buyer, a tenant who might buy down the road.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for the best possible use to come into this space.
Cool.
We want something that activates it. We're right across the, you know, kitty corner, I guess, from Waite Park.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the new apartments go in up the street. We've got...
With the Dahlia.
Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, Gwyn's Coffee House and Backstop and lots of other businesses that really have activated spaces. So when I think about what we're trying to do here, we're trying to find something that comes in that activates this corner, that gives people... a reason to come downtown, another reason to come downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm not the Main Street manager anymore,
right.
I'm always going to be a lover of downtown and a supporter of downtown. And
this is a really important building. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, have nostalgic memories about this place. It's, as far as buildings downtown, it's one of the probably largest and has a great visibility. It definitely would be a benefit, I think, to places to actually use it and not just let it sit empty.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not our intention, to just let it sit empty. And,
sure.
And we are basically working on getting proposals from people,
mm-hmm.
so that we can figure out what is going to be the best thing to do with this building in the future.
Cool. Have you had interest so far? It's been open for about a month, I think.
Yeah.
Or?
We've had some people ask for the information, which is available on our canbyoregon.gov website.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that we found with situations like this is that the proposals or the expressions of interest, that really does come in kind of at the 11th hour.
Okay.
You know, a deadline is great for all people. So I think people think about what they would want to do. They think about, you know, how they would want to do something.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different aspects that go into it.
There's not people just sitting out there just waiting with a proposal for the former public library building in Canby?
I mean, if they are, they should contact me. Now is the time.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I think that we'll hear from more people kind of when we get closer to that deadline.
Which is?
November 16th.
Okay. So, obviously, people, like I mentioned, have nostalgic memories. This is a big deal to a lot of people in town. They've kind of been following and have been talking about it. As you probably know, there's a lot of interest, it seems, in this space being something like a youth center of some kind of kids or recreational center. What would have to happen for that kind of thing to be possible?
Well, that someone would have to submit a proposal. We're asking for, you know...
So this might be like a nonprofit or something.
It could be a nonprofit.
That would be interesting.
It could be, you know, someone who has a business plan for something like that.
Okay.
It really depends. The last time that we did this, we got very different proposals.
Mm.
All good proposals.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of good ideas out there. What we need is someone who can actually implement and make it happen.
Okay. Cool. What would your dream be if it were up to you? What would you love to see happen here?
Well, my dream for this building would be that it's activated, that people are in and out at all different times of the day, not just 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or 10 to 4, but that at 9 a.m. and at 9 p.m., there's still a reason to come here. I don't know if you've ever been to Wenatchee, but they have a public market there.
Oh, cool.
That's a big warehouse of a building that they have put in. Oh, it must be like 20 different businesses. You
mm-hmm.
can buy fresh flowers. You can buy gifts. You can stay and eat. They have two businesses right next to each other that are owned by the same owner. One is Fire and one is Ice. It's pizza and ice cream.
Oh, okay.
And it allows those businesses to each have a smaller footprint. You know, they can open when they want and close when they want. But that they have their footprint, it kind of is almost like an incubator type space.
Okay.
It's incredible.
I've seen that work in other communities, that business incubator type deal. Can you talk about what that is a little bit, if no one's ever heard of that? If their experience with incubators is just chicks coming out of the eggs.
Right, right. Well, typically an incubator is, you know, it's a smaller space that allows a startup business that usually is a little bit smaller. So a great example, I came here from Yakima, Washington. There was a woman who made soap,
mm-hmm.
and she made soap in her garage for her friends.
Mm-hmm.
Her friends loved it. So then she made soap in her garage at the farm and sold at the farmer's market. Then she was able to find a very small footprint in a big building that I think, you know, she probably had 300 square feet or something, maybe
sure.
even smaller. And that was her kind of incubator space.
And she used that just as a storefront, or did she?
Storefront.
She still made it in
she
her garage.
She still made it in her garage. But then she then turned that into such a successful business that she had to expand her footprint. She was able to partner with other people who were, you know, hand crafters and artisans who then she sold their wares as well. So you could go to her much bigger footprint. You could buy her soap. I think she expanded to candles. And then you could buy, you know, a handmade item from other smaller businesses.
Okay.
Success stories like that are not unique to her.
Mm-hmm.
It's and it's amazing that she was able to take her dream and make it into a reality. I think that a space like this, broken up in the right way, could help our small entrepreneurs really have that startup and become a reality here in Canby.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Well, Jamie, I think we have a couple more minutes. Like I mentioned, I know you're doing a ton of different stuff. Is there anything that you're really, really excited about or really think people should know about economic development-wise that's coming down the pike here in Canby?
There's a lot of really great things that happen that are happening in Canby that are coming down the pike. Things that I'm really excited about, from our industrial park to our downtowns. We, you know, the Dahlia that we've talked about already, they're looking to fill that space. They're They're talking to a brewery and looking to bring business downtown. So I think that it's an exciting time to be in Canby. Mm. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be in my new role. And I just can't wait to see what comes next, because I think the best is yet to come.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for having me here, letting me come into the big spooky library. Yeah. It's kind of exciting to think about, you know, where we're standing maybe in a few months, maybe a year. It'll be something completely different. Maybe the offices of Canby Now Podcast. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. I hope that someday that you have an office in our...
Maybe not need this much space, but we'll see.
Maybe not. Maybe not 11,000, but close.
Cool. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jamie. Okay, so stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with our history segment, Canby Then. In any small town, few public institutions are more beloved, more celebrated, more vital to the health and overall well-being of the community than the local library. Perhaps only the wastewater treatment plant comes close, and for very different reasons. Canby has hosted a free public library since as early as 1896, though the library has taken on many different forms and many different locations over the years. The earliest Canby libraries from 1896 to 1916 were tiny collections hosted by an inconstant smattering of downtown business owners. These were essentially a 20th century version of the little free libraries that can be found in neighborhoods today. In February 1924, a new organization took shape. The Canby Women's Civic Club was founded by over 100 local ladies, quote, for the purpose of advancing the educational, moral, civic, and aesthetic interests of the town. Ambitious would be an understatement in describing the Canby Women's Civic Club. Their first goals were to establish an orchestra of young people, reinstate the Canby Band, and form a reading club, study club, and literary society. Oh, and they also decided it was high time Canby had a real library. And for the next 100 years, this tradition will continue of strong, active, creative, and civic-minded women leading the charge to build, maintain, and strengthen Canby's library services. For 10 years, the club kept open a volunteer library in town, but in 1935, the group decided the town finally needed a permanent location with a staff librarian. In 1937, three members, Portia Shuey, Mabel Gabriel, and Edna Johnson, went door-to-door to ask for the community's support, gathering 643 books and a tidy sum of cash to start a public library. Their dream became a reality in June of that year, when the Canby City Council agreed to furnish a room, space, and lights for a library to be maintained at City Hall. Like the libraries already established in Molalla, Sandy, Milwaukee, and Estacada, the Canby Library would be a project of FDR's New Deal, specifically the Works Progress Administration, which employed millions to carry out public works projects in virtually every community in America throughout the 1930s and 40s. Portia Shuey and Edna Johnson were appointed to the first library board, along with Harvey Everhart, Frank Cutsforth, and George Gabriel. Its first bookshelves were made by the Stephanie Lumbering Company, and construction for the new library proceeded smoothly. There was just one problem. They did not have enough books. The people of Canby and the surrounding areas were asked to donate at least one book to the town's first official library. Residents were advised that the books could be dropped off at the Canby Herald office or any of the board members' homes. No addresses were given. Presumably in those days, everybody knew where everybody lived. The first library was Doris Wilborn, whose position was funded by the National Youth Administration, another New Deal brainchild. Following in her footsteps a few years later was Ora Lee Catley, whom you might remember from our history piece on the Canby Ferry. She was the cousin of M.J. Lee,
who out-christened the Queen of England the day she smashed a bottle of champagne across the bow of the ferry bearing his name. But she was much more than that. Like Lee, she was a descendant of the town's earliest pioneers. Her grandparents, Philander and Anna Lee, arrived in the Willamette Valley in 1848, and 2 years later took title to a 611-acre donation land claim that now lies at the heart of Canby. Her father, Heman A. Lee, was the city's first mayor when it was incorporated in 1893. Her uncle, Albert Lee, was Canby's first merchant and also served as its first railroad agent. The youngest of eight children, Ora Lee was a beautiful young woman. In 1910, at the age of 20, she was crowned the first ever queen of the Clackamas County Fair. Maybe that explains how she was able to out-christen Elizabeth II. A small nugget of her early life is preserved in a letter she wrote to the editor of the Oregonian in 1941. She recalled watching her pioneer grandmother, Anna, plucking feathers from a live chicken outside her house one day. Another grandchild said, "Grandma, it hurts to have his feathers pulled out," to which she replied, "Can't help it if it does." Ora shared her family's passion for civil service and seeing Canby grow. In 1934, she was elected the first female board member for Canby Union High School. She was also a charter member and president of the Canby PTA and was active in a number of other service, historical, and fraternal organizations. She and her husband, George, for many years ran a diner, the Cozy Corner Confectionery, on the corner of Highway 99E and Ivy. Soup, a sandwich, pie, and coffee would set you back 35 cents. The diner was later converted to a Greyhound bus depot. We have much more to tell you about the Canby Public Library and Ora Lee Catley, but it'll have to wait until next time on Canby Then. Okay, so for this segment, I've got our producer Tyler Clausen on.
Hello.
And we are doing Soapbox.
Again. Soapier.
Yeah.
Soapbox too.
Even boxier. Tyler, you just said hi.
Yeah,
tell people what this is,
what
if they missed the last
is.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So if you didn't listen last time, basically this is
go
where,
back and listen.
Yeah, for one, stop listening now. I can't remember what name we're making fun of, but that was, I hope we heard from her.
Oh, Susie.
Susie.
Yes.
I hope we hear
this
from
is,
Susie.
Shout out to Susie.
Anyway, if you're listening to this, just know this segment is just our opinions. It's not where we have all the facts right. We're kind of spitballing here, just talking over things that that are brought up to us. Just because we have this platform of a podcast does not mean that we are more educated on this subject. It does not mean that we are right. And the fact is, we're probably going to be wrong. That's why we're discussing it, and why I'm here, so I can get more right. And so we're doing this because we do have a platform. We want to kind of allow for people to have the ability to conversate, even if they disagree on things. We want to model that, especially for our younger listeners. We mm-hmm. want to be able yeah. to show them that you can have an opinion, you can conversate about the opinion without losing your mind over stuff.
Throwing
and then,
stuff.
Yeah, someone. And then learn how to engage with that. Learn yeah. how to take it from an opinion to something else. So that's the big thing of why we do this.
Yeah, I feel that discussions, you know, so much of the time is so high stakes. Like, you feel like you have to be right. You prove the other person wrong.
Yeah.
And I think we're trying to show that you can just have fun discussions.
Yes, absolutely.
About important things.
And hopefully learn something from each other.
Yeah.
Is the big thing. So. With that, I mean, that's what we're doing. That's Soapbox. So today, Frankie, what are
so
we
today
about?
We're starting a series on the ballot measures and the statewide ballot measures in the upcoming midterm November election.
Thought we were going to talk about the Avengers 4.
Yeah, no, that's not what we do here. and we're just starting in no particular order. Actually, it is just in a chronological numerical
is that
order. Yes, so it is in an
you
order.
You want to say
it's not in an order of importance?
Yeah.
And so today we're talking about Measure 102.
Yeah, 102, the big one. The
okay.
Good old granddaddy.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Okay, so 102 is about bond measures.
Great, still over my head.
Okay.
What are we talking about?
A bond measure is something that a local government puts before voters, and it's basically like a loan that they take out.
Okay.
But it has to be approved by the voters.
Okay.
And there's actually one that we'll be voting on in Canby for the fire district this year. So if people, you know, weren't sure what that's about, we actually are interviewing the fire district here in a couple weeks, and we'll have that on in our soapbox, and we'll have that interview as well. But this is about all ballot measures and are all bond measures. And it's basically a loan, like I said, a really large loan. So we're talking like millions of dollars. It can only be used.
So I can't get this loan. I can't walk in and be like, hey, Canby, can I
no,
get
No, because you're not a local government. You're not a government entity.
Listen, I got some remodels to do on my house.
You don't have anyone like living inside you, well, as far as I know. Anyway, let's move on. But it's a lot of money, and it's for really big ticket items or buildings. Like if a school district needs to build some more schools,
right?
In our case, with the fire district, they're looking to buy some new equipment. Like again, like really expensive, like fire trucks, like big time stuff that they can't afford out of their normal budget. Okay, and the fire district's also looking to build.
I'm getting what you're putting down. I think I know what's happening.
Okay, so that's a bond measure. What this ballot measure would do is right now a government entity can only the stuff that they build can only be stuff that they would own. So like the school district can only build a school that they would own, or a county can only build an office building that would be house county stuff.
Sure.
This would allow counties, cities, and towns to build something for like a nonprofit or a private business. And it's essentially built around, this was proposed out of the port of the city of Portland, and built around the idea of affordable housing.
Okay.
So basically like, and it would still have to be approved by voters, but a city could go to the voters and take out a bond to build affordable housing, or partner with someone to build affordable housing that someone else would then operate. And the whole idea is that a lot of cities, especially Portland, needs more affordable housing.
Sure.
And there's really no it's the profit margins for developers are not that great for affordable housing. That's why they don't tend to do it.
Right.
And for cities that need it, they really have not a lot of incentives to have developers build more affordable housing other than just asking, hey, can you please build some affordable housing in our city? And they would do it out of the goodness of their heart. So this allows them to say, actually, you know, we've got some money that we can now put toward this development that would be a lot more enticing to you to build this thing that we really need for our citizens.
I think enticing is
the correct word. Your face lit up. You're looking really interested in this all of a sudden.
I am, because, okay. Now, I get the whole, let's have some affordable housing for people.
Like,
that's a good idea.
Sure.
Let's help everybody out the poor.
Affordable housing is nice.
An idea of what we could do for
I'm really
everyone.
Scared. I'm really scared.
I mean, let's just build like a theme park.
Oh, my gosh.
Like with a water park on the side. We're already getting stuff for the firemen. That's water-based stuff. We can just add it to the theme park, right? And then we can like have like a big slide, like the splashdown, and like, and then we talked about the ferry a long time ago. We could have like a ferry ride that goes
like
through
2 weeks ago,
and then and then like I'm just thinking you're talking about
this
how
is,
people
this
need
is
more
just Canby Town,
profit
the theme park,
yeah. We'll demolish Barlow,
yeah,
and we'll put Canby Town,
yeah,
next to Canby.
I don't know. The people that I've been talking to in Canby, I feel like would not be in favor of that at all. But we'll see.
All I'm saying
is, I'm pretty sure this ballot measure would not allow that.
If we vote yes for this, there's the possibility of Canby Town with the splashdown.
I don't think that that's true, just for the record. But you're in favor of it. Go ahead. Give us your informed opinion.
My informed opinion of an article on the internet and what you just rambled and went over my head with while I was thinking about the theme park in my head.
All,
I think you probably saw halfway through.
Yeah.
I
saw your face lit up. I was like, he's not getting it.
Oh, I get it. But I think that, to be honest, I mean, again, this is me. This is how I feel. I don't care. Like,
it's affordable housing.
It
People
is.
Need it. So let me just give you throw you a couple of things here in Clackamas County, because we did that news story. It's a big need here you know,
in Canby?
Well, in Canby and in Clackamas. Obviously, in Canby, we've got housing issues.
Do we?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you used to be a renter in Canby. You know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking more.
You're thinking specifically like homelessness.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
So there's this whole range, right? Like people just focus on the homelessness, but there's this whole spectrum of people that are like in at risk for homelessness.
Okay.
You know that it's like housing adequacy as opposed to just being homeless. So
there are
folks that may have a place to quote unquote live, but
apartment complexes in Canby now already, and I know this from personal experience because I used to live in one of them, where it is like a threshold that you cannot make more than a certain amount and live at this apartment complex.
Right.
So isn't that what we already have in the city?
I think that we do have some of it. There's just not enough.
And are those held by private contractors, or is that city-owned? Is that county-owned?
I don't know the answer to that question.
And I guess that would be – I would be interested to see, okay, is...
I think they're probably privately owned, and the vouchers and things are probably federal, I would guess.
Oh, okay. So this would be more local, state-owned sort of thing?
Well, this would be something outside of, like, the federal housing program. So it would be... it would be subsidized in a different way. It would be subsidized more locally, yeah.
Yeah, and so... And I mean, I definitely... It obviously... Having lived in a place like that, it's a huge boost for someone like me who I was fresh out of college. I couldn't afford anything.
Right.
So I think that is a really good idea. And having things that help people is always – how can you be like, no, I don't want something that's going to help people live in Canby? Like that would be stupid to say.
Right.
But what's the other side of this? Who would say no to this and for what reason?
So I – just because it's good to have a podcast where people disagree, right? I'm going to come out against. No, I'm in favor of it as well, but I did have a concern. Let me just throw something at you right here. Okay. Take a look at this right here. Tell me how that grabs you.
Okay, hold on. I'm reading now, so this is going to take a while.
Just the graph.
Oh, support is 200 million 826,625.43. Opposition is $0.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of that?
I don't know what that means.
So this is
just showed me numbers.
A big resource that I use for stuff like this is Ballotpedia. It's like the Wikipedia of election stuff.
Right.
And when I just showed Tyler, which he misquoted the number, but was the campaign contributions for the sides.
Did I get that number wrong? Really?
You said 200 million. So it's almost $3 million in support, $0 in opposition.
Okay.
So that when I first read that, I was like, what the heck? Like,
there's nothing that's nothing. Well, nobody likes something that much. There's somebody who hates something all the time.
No, it's like there's must be some well-heeled developers that are behind this, like, you know, trying to get some sweet tax dollars, you know, that they don't have access to for building.
Yeah.
And then I learned something that kind of mitigated that a little bit. So, there's $2.8 million that's been contributed in support.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of that, like the huge, huge bulk of that, about $2.6 million of that is from this one coalition called Defend Oregon, which is also registered in all four of the other ballot measures in the state. And there's no way to tell what amount of money that they've received is for which ballot measure.
Okay.
Okay, so we don't know that the $2.6, almost $2.5 million in cash that they've received – we don't know how much of that was really for 102. Might have been for some other ballot measure.
Okay.
So when you're just looking at it and it's $3 million against zero, it's like, why are they putting so much money when there's no one on the other side?
Sure.
This looks kind of sketchy. Probably not as bad as it looks, but I do think it's good to look at that context, see where the money's going, because the words on the ballot don't always say the whole story. There's a whole kinds of stuff going on under the surface sometimes. All that said, I am in favor of it. We need more affordable housing in Clackamas County. This is a really creative way to get that, I think. And
for me, it's not a matter of I support it wholeheartedly, because to me, again, it's just a matter of like, all right, this is a thing. And to me, helping people is the best thing to do.
Better okay. than not helping.
And it seems like you're in agreement. And so far, you're the guy that looks into this stuff. You know of this Ballopedia. I've never heard of that before.
there's an EDF for everything now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But, like, I want to hear from you guys, please. What reason do you have to oppose this? Because I legitimately can't think of anything off the top of my head, and I want to know if there's anything against this that I'm not seeing.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I think from what I've seen, even in newspaper editorials and stuff, most people seem to be in favor of this. I think that the only concerns people would have is kind of gets into the money thing that I mentioned, that it could possibly, there could be some corruption stuff that could come up from this. You never know when there's money, public funds going to private people. And the only other thing is just that this is a constitutional amendment, and that can sometimes cause problems because they're so rigid.
Yeah.
If there's something in the law that has an unintended consequence, it's hard to change.
Yeah.
But at least this is not a voter referred, that's, you know, written by a citizen. This was legislatively referred, so
sure.
They tend to do better with, you know, knowing what the law should be and how it should be written. So
yeah, and I mean, I'm in favor of anything that gets a water park in Canby.
Okay,
I want
again.
The splashdown. I want it in Canby. Help me with that.
Okay. Let's kick it over to upcoming events. Upcoming events this weekend, we've got a lot going on in Canby, most of it at the library. On Friday, head over to the Canby Public Library for Music by the Fireplace from 11 to 2. Listen to the acoustic stylings of local musician Michael O'Rear while you check out some fall reading recommendations or return that long overdue library book. On Saturday at 11 a.m., Intercambio and Storytime in Spanish at the Canby Public Library. Fine-tune your language skills with native English and Spanish speakers. Then, later that day, Music in the Stacks at 2:30 by the Hops and Honey Good Time Band. Enjoy an intoxicating blend of ragtime, early jazz, and country blues from the 1920s and 30s. Generously funded by the Friends of the Library. A couple of big fundraisers that night. The Canby Rotary Club will be hosting a tour of Italy, starting at 5:30 at Willamette Valley Country Club. Stop by for an authentic Italian dinner and wine tasting, auction, raffle, and fun. The event supports the Rotary Scholarship Fund and charitable activities in our community. At 6:30, Operation Magic by magician Scott Anderson, as heard on the Canby Now podcast, and also seen on lesser-known shows like America's Got Talent and the NBC Nightly News. Operation Magic is a family-friendly Las Vegas-style production with magic, stunts, comedy, and tons of audience participation. All proceeds benefit the Canby Boy Scout Troop 258. Finally, on Sunday, head to St. Joseph's at 2 p.m. for Paint and Sip, a guided painting class by Free to Be Art. Enjoy a glass of St. Joseph's wine of your choice or a local microbrew while you channel your inner Bob Ross in composing a moonlit pumpkin patch scene. You can find links to the tickets to all three of those events on our website at canbynowpod.com/calendar. And that's our show. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Our producer is Tyler Clausen. Special thanks to our guest today, Jamie Stickle and the City of Canby. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Our show Monday is going to be a really good one. We'll be talking with Linda Scher, a mediator and member of Better Angels, a citizens' political dialogue and unification movement. She'll tell us ways we can survive this election season without going insane or getting unfriended on Facebook. If you have a news tip, an idea, or a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at CanbyNow, or on our website, canbynowpod.com. Thanks for listening.